Listen to Today with Sean O'Rourke with the RTE Radio Player.
My next guest crammed a lot into 5 years in the European Parliament, where she focused on human rights, climate change, gender pay, and she says her most significant achievement was the role she played in helping to secure the release of Ibrahim Halawa. Lynn Boylan lost her seat in the May elections, an experience she says left her shell-shocked, but now she's taking a step back from politics to study for a master's degree. Thank you very much indeed for coming to studio, Lynn Boylan, formerly, of course, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin. It's 5 months, I think, since the elections are close enough to it at this stage. I've often heard people who lost a seat, be it in the Dáil or elsewhere, describe it as a bereavement. Is that how it was in your case?
It is. I mean, it's like a kick in the stomach, I suppose, when you realise that, you know, everything that you've planned for the next 5 years. So while it's a huge privilege to be an elected rep and you never take the electorate for granted, you can't help but sort of make plans as what you're going to do and, you know, the campaigns you're working on and how you're going to further them. And then you wake up one morning and, you know, you're not able to use that platform to help people. You know, you don't have a job to go to. So, yeah, it is. It's a little bit like a bereavement.
How did it affect you?
It's a day-to-day thing. You know, you wake up some mornings and you see all the positives of it when you're not waking up at 4 a.m. to fly to Brussels. You get to spend more time with your family. But it is, I think that the hardest part to deal with it is, one, it's not just me. There's people who are working for you in Brussels. There's people who are working like really hard for you in Dublin. They're out of work. And then you have all of the campaign groups that you've still unfinished business with. So the likes of the Stardust families, you know, that you're not going to have that platform to be able to help them in the same way that you were as an elected rep.
You didn't suffer alone. Your Ireland South colleague, Leanna Riada, lost her seat. I think half the Sinn Féin elected councillors in the local councils lost their seats as well. You went from, I think it was about 159 to half that. It was quite the shellacking. I mean, did you see it coming at all?
To be honest, no, not at all. And that's probably what made it slightly harder to deal with. We were certainly not getting negativity on the doors, you know, and it was an energetic campaign. There were hundreds of activists out every day canvassing with you. So no, you didn't see it coming. And it is a hard one to take. But look, every political party has good elections and bad elections. And I think the key thing for any party is that you learn from the mistakes and you listen to what both the activists on the ground are telling you and the electorate of what, you know, what didn't work, go well for you. So that's it's about learning.
A lot of people, when they have these setbacks, they dust themselves down and say, right, I'll be back. You seem to have taken a different approach. I mean, there are four by-elections coming up. I think one of them is in Dublin. Two of them in Dublin.
Two, yep.
They would have been, I presume, ideal platforms for you to relaunch yourself. You've said no.
No, and as I said, it's a huge honour to be elected and for people to you know, vote for you, walk in and make that vote. But it does take a lot out of you in terms of, you know, your mental health, your physical health with all the travelling. So just at the moment for me, I'd like to just take a space, a breather. I'm definitely not ruling myself out of running in the future, but just in the terms of the by-election, I'd like to just, you know, spend a little bit of time with my family, my nieces, and you know, focus on studying, but also looking for work. And
yeah, but yeah. I mean, do you rule out the by-elections? But what about the general election, which is likely to take place by the spring of next year?
Well, we don't know when the election's going to be. As I said,
would that be too soon for you?
I don't know. Like, as I said, I'm taking things day by day. I've committed to 2 days a week in doing a master's. I really, you know, regardless of whether or not I'm an elected rep, I'm an activist first and foremost. I'll be out on the climate march on Friday. I'll be, you know, supporting the families of the Stardust when the Attorney General makes his finding this week as well. That's what I am. I'm an activist. So whether or not that role is as an elected rep or working for an organisation or just being an activist on the street. I'm not leaving politics in that way, but I don't know, is the honest answer.
Yeah, I mentioned your role at the outset, your role in helping to free Ibrahim Halawa, the Irish teenager who spent 4 years in prison in Egypt. I think you were the first outsider to visit him in that Wadi al-Natroun prison in 2015. There's an interesting story there as to how that came about. You had to bend the rules a little bit?
Slightly. Again, it shows you how, as an elected rep, it does open doors in terms of how you can help people and you can do things that you couldn't get away with if you weren't elected. We went out to the prison in August 2015, and I suppose in a way invited myself into the prison with headed MEP Parliament paper and a letter wrote in Arabic through the supportive Reprieve, the NGO that's based in London. And we kind of got our way all the way up to the governor's office before they kind of realised what had happened and that I wasn't supposed to be there and I hadn't got an official invite. But
did you have to incentivise people, if I can put it politely?
Yes,
we
were outside the courtroom the day before in a very, very tense situation. It was 35, 36 degrees. There was no shade and lots of... Because the courtrooms are on the prison grounds and so lots of very heavily armed soldiers and they wouldn't allow us in to the court. But one of the lawyers representing somebody else in the mass trial came up to myself and Ibrahim's sister and said, look, if you go to such and such a place at such and such a time, a certain official is on duty and that will help you to get access to the prison. So we did that and we kind of had to go through at least four officials but they were officials who we were told to ask for, if I can
put
it that way.
And did you have to bribe them?
Let's just say we had to, soften the ways to get them to stamp the forms to get to the prison. Yeah, so we had to do what had to be done to get into the prison.
What kind of money was involved?
To be honest, I don't know. It wasn't me. But it's the situation that's out there.
Was it done in cash and with dollars?
As I said, I wasn't the one in the room doing it.
You're being a bit coy about this.
It wasn't me handing over the money. But basically, we were told to talk to certain officials. Mm-hmm. And for me, I mean, yes, you look back and you sort of go, God, that was probably very naive and a dangerous thing to be doing in a country that has the problems that Egypt has. But on the flip side of that, it was the opportunity to allow Ibrahim to hug and have physical contact with a family member, which he hadn't had for over a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And for myself and the lawyers who were in that room that day when that happened, I think it's something that will stay with you till you die, just that experience of the emotion.
You're now doing a part-time master's degree in climate change. Are you encouraged by the fact that the president-elect of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has said she wants Europe to be the first carbon-neutral continent by 2050? Do you trust her commitments?
Absolutely not, because I've seen the Commission's plans to be carbon-neutral by 2050. They've set out eight scenarios, only two of them achieve carbon neutrality, but both of them rely on nuclear energy and gas. So they're just not facing up to the reality of how big the problem is and the changes that need to be made. So I don't think anything is going to change. I mean, the Mercosur deal shows you that there's no change. It's business mm-hmm. as usual when it comes to tackling climate change.
Yeah. You talked about how you didn't really see the setbacks coming for Sinn Féin. I mean, again, in the time that's happened or that's passed since then, have you been able to put your finger on where it all went wrong?
I think, look, you have to take a certain amount of responsibility yourself. Like, we were doing a lot of work on climate action mm-hmm. in the European Parliament. We were the only political group that produced a climate emergency manifesto. We were the group, along with the Greens, who invited Greta Thunberg to the Parliament, who fought to make sure that appearance happened. And I don't think that message was getting out in Ireland of the work that we were doing on climate action. So I think that's a failing on me. But also, I think it is very, very hard as an MEP and an MEP when you're not an MEP from Fine Gael to actually get on the airwaves and to get coverage.
Yeah, though, I mean, Sinn Féin has been highly professional in its media relations and has been for years. And you know, you're right up there with the best and the people who work with you. And again, I suppose maybe there's an element of a changing generation, Gerry Adams making way for Mary Lou MacDonald. Also, in the north, the death of Mark McGuinness and then the succession there went to... Michelle O'Neill, I beg your pardon. And she's being challenged now for the vice presidency by John O'Dowd. What do you make of that?
I'm more bewildered by the attitude of the media in Ireland to the fact that there is a challenge to the leadership on a democratic process to choose who's going to be the leaders of the party. Because for years we listened to people telling us that we were undemocratic. Then we elect two formidable women to the role of leadership, and you get the commentary that, oh, but are they really the leaders? Isn't there people behind pulling the strings? Now we have an open competition between two very qualified people, Michelle O'Neill and John O'Dowd. I know them both. And now it's like, oh, well, that means there must be problems in Sinn Féin because they're being challenged. No, it's a sign that the party is, you know, it's a democratic party, and that it's good. It's good to have healthy debate about positions. Nobody should feel that their position is a right. And I think I look forward to the debates at the
Ardet. Except that Gerry Adams was there for, what is it, 36 years or something like that,
but
or maybe more.
Any member of Sinn Féin could have put their name forward and chose not
but
to.
But strange to relate, nobody did for
nobody
since
did,
between 1986.
But I think he did a formidable job, and he has brought the party to where we are.
But it must be very disappointing, though, to see a new, very competent, articulate female leader as Mary Lou MacDonald is, just missing the target, certainly, where, you know, electoral success was concerned.
Well, I think that she gets very tough scrutiny and gets probably judged in a harder fashion than other political leaders do, in that they're desperate for her to trip up. But I'll put it to you like this. I would not have been an MEP. I would not have been able to do everything I mm-hmm. did for the 5 years I was there, only for the fact that Mary Lou MacDonald met me and convinced me to run. And she is an incredible mentor to the female politicians in the party, and encouraging them to have the confidence to put their names forward.
Earlier this week, a BBC Northern Ireland spotlight programme it carried a claim by Des Long, a former member of the IRA's ruling Army Council, that Gerry Adams lied about his membership of that organisation. Now, when you speak about human rights issues, do you ever find it difficult to reconcile that with your membership of Sinn Féin, given its links to violence and terrorism?
Well, Sean, I think the first thing I say is that what I won't miss about being an elected rep is the fact that every time you go on the media, it's like rule 101 in the journalist's book, ask the Shinners about Gerry Adams and his membership or not of the IRA.
And the first time I asked you that question was just after you were elected to the European Parliament, and you said, well, he denies it and that's good enough for me.
And
which was a bit of a sidestep. I should have pulled you up on it at the time.
Well, I could have pulled you up on a couple of things over the years as well. Look, I joined the party after the peace process. The man Gerry Adams, and Martin McGuinness for that matter, are the men I knew, are men who have dedicated their entire life to the peace process. And in the 5 years I've had as an MEP, when you go abroad, you see the respect that people have
for Gerry
Adams. No question,
but do you believe Gerry Adams was not a member of the IRA?
I do, and I do believe him, and I believe that it's up to everybody to make their own minds up. But what I'll say to you is he is respected for bringing the peace process about, but also the maintaining cohesion in the party. And that has to, even if you fundamentally disagree with the violence, if you fundamentally disagree with the politics of Sinn Féin, he did bring cohesion and did bring about a peace process. And like one of the first Ardet I attended as a member of Sinn Féin was the policing one in 2007. The months up to that, Gerry Adams travelled the country, sat at kitchen tables and convinced the Republican movement to support the PSNI. And I think he deserves a lot of respect for that.
Do change. I mean, go back in history, people do change. They follow parliamentary procedures and processes where previously they were revolutionaries.
But I don't think Gerry gets the credit he deserves for sacrificing his whole life to the peace process, to making sure that we never go back to the dark days. And I think history will judge him more fairly than
How worried are you that with Brexit and all that, that there might be a return to the dark days?
It's deeply concerning, and it's something that Sinn Féin are acutely aware of, because we are the only party really effectively operating both north and south of the border. That's why.
Yeah, but is it helpful to start talking about having is it helpful to start talking about having a referendum on a United Ireland at this time?
I think it would be deeply irresponsible to not talk about it, because everybody else is talking about it. The European Parliament is talking about it. The President of France is talking about it. Everybody is sort of going, but wouldn't that be the logical solution, is to have a United Ireland? Nobody is criticising Nicola Sturgeon for calling for a second referendum if there's a no-deal Brexit. And that was a deeply divisive referendum, but it proved that it could be held peacefully. But it did divide Scottish society. So I think we have to be responsible and we have to start looking and planning for having that conversation with people on a united Ireland.
Lynn Boylan, thank you so much for coming to studio and good luck in your endeavours wherever they take you. We'll take a break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.